Okay, I'm waiting to see. There we go. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. This is the Tucson Pima County Historical Commission meeting of Wednesday, October 9th, 2024, called to order at 12:02 p.m. Could we do roll call, please, Carlin?
Yes. Alice and Doggy? Andrew Christopher?
Here.
Carlos Lozano?
Here.
Courtney Marks? Gary Miner? Jeffrey Elwand? Helen Erickson?
Here.
Jan Mulder?
Hold on a second, please.
Do you want to go back to
Jan?
Yeah,
okay. I can hear you now. Let me.
Okay, thank you.
I think I can hear you.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay, sorry about that.
Jan Mulder? AJ Lamb?
Jan? Can you hear us, Jan? I see your logo.
Oh, this is JJ. I'm here.
Yeah. Joel Ireland?
Here.
Julie Rigoli?
I can't hear.
Julie, can you hear us? Turn up your microphone. Or do you want to try the dial-in number on the agenda?
I can't.
We can hear you.
I cannot hear anything.
Can you unmute your microphone?
Put a thumbs up, somebody, if there's speaking going on. Okay, so I had the same problem that some of you have had. Excuse me while I get some help.
Okay.
Ken Scoville?
Present.
Kathy Kubisch?
Here.
Peter Steer?
Here.
Ricky Riojas? Savannah McDonald?
Here.
Steve Grady?
Here.
Harry Majewski?
Here.
Tim Hagyard?
Here.
This is Alice Sadongi. I'm here.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Alice.
Did I miss anyone that I didn't call upon?
Well, I tell you what, could you just go through real quick because when Julie called me, I didn't hear, and I'd like to have the record for who was here. So
okay,
I had Andrew Christopher, Carlos Lozano, and then
yes.
Who?
And then we had Helen Erickson, JJ Lamb, mm-hmm. Joel Ireland, Julie Rigoli, Ken Scoville, Kathy Kubisch, Peter Steer, Savannah McDonald, Steve Grady, Terry Majewski, Tim Hagyard. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
I have 14 without Jan. 12, 13. I only have 13, so Jan would be. Well, we'll
Jan
get it
would
with
be.
The she would be 15 or 14?
She would be 14.
Okay, well, let's. 3, 6, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, okay. So when she gets back on, we'll hopefully. There's another number. We've got two phone numbers. We've got Peter and JJ, and there's.
I believe
is there
Alice.
Third one? There's an Alice. Okay.
Yeah.
And right, excuse me, but I'm back in and I can hear.
Okay. Great. Excellent,
perfect.
Julie. So we'll put Julie's already on there. So.
Yes.
All right. I'm sorry about that, folks. Let's go on to item two, which is land acknowledgement. Commissioner Lozano, would you like to read that, please?
Sure, thanks. On behalf of the residents of the City of Tucson, the City of South Tucson, and Pima County, we honor the tribal nations who have served as caretakers of this land from time immemorial and respectfully acknowledge the ancestral homelands of the Tohono O'odham Nation and the multi-millennial presence of the Patskwayaki tribe within Pima County, consistent with the TPCHC's commitment to diversity and inclusion. We strive toward building equal partner relationships with Arizona's tribal nations.
Thank you, Carlos. Item 3 is approval of the TPCHC minutes from the meetings of 9/11/24 and 9/20/24. Could I have a motion to approve as submitted, please?
This is Kathy Kubish. I move to approve the minutes.
This is Ken. I'll second.
Okay, is there any discussion? Okay, and Carla, I'm sorry to interrupt, but did you get that Jan got on about a minute ago?
Yes, I did mark it.
Terry, can you hear me now?
Yes.
I've been on the whole time. You just couldn't hear me. I could hear you and see you, but I wasn't being heard. So I logged back on.
Okay. All right. So now we're in the middle of this motion. There's no discussion. Let's go ahead and call roll, please, Carla, on the approval of the minutes from those two meetings.
Allison Doggy?
Aye.
Andrew Christopher?
Aye.
Carla Lozano?
Aye.
Helen Erickson?
Aye.
Jan Mulder?
Aye.
J.J. Lamb?
Aye.
Joel Ireland?
Yes.
Julie Rigoli?
Aye.
Ken Scoville?
Yes.
Kathy Kubish?
Aye.
Peter Steer?
Aye.
Savannah McDonald?
Aye.
Steve Grady?
Aye.
Terry Majewski?
Aye.
Tim Haggard?
Aye.
15-0, motion passes.
Thank you very much. Item 4 is a chairperson summary of current events. We have a very full meeting, so you'll notice that some of the times allotted for topics are reduced, so I would ask everybody reporting to be as succinct as possible, because we do have longer presentations from the city and county on their preservation programs. It's an important thing. Also, I wanted to report that we voted last month to send a letter to Mayor and Council and others about our concerns about the city preservation program. The reason I have not sent that yet is because I have had a number of conversations with Corin Manning, and also I was asked to send in comments on the proposed job description for the historic preservation officer. And so Helen and others helped me draft the letter that will eventually go out, but I incorporated a lot of the comments from the letter into the HPO job description, and also Helen reviewed it. Corin and I spoke again yesterday, and there's a bunch of stuff that's changed up as a result of very productive conversations. We also may want to add a few things to the letter after we hear today's presentation on the city preservation program. So I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. A lot has happened in a very positive fashion. Okay, item 5. It recently posted subcommittee LAR/minutes. You can go to the link provided there to look at things that have been posted since our last meeting, subcommittee minutes or various things. Okay, item 5. Oh, that was item 5. Item 6 is removal of subcommittees. Helen, did you want to make any changes in the Plan Tucson Working Group?
Yes, I wanted to add Jan Mulder, and she has said she is willing to serve.
Okay. Would you, and you'll keep the rest of your subcommittee or your working group?
Yes.
Okay, so that would be add Jan Mulder to Plan Tucson Working Group. Is that your motion, Helen?
Yes.
Okay, is there a second?
Second, Steve Grady.
Okay, is there any discussion? Okay, could you go ahead and call roll quickly, please?
Yes, Alice and Doggy?
Aye.
Andrew Christopher?
Aye.
Carlos Lozano?
Aye.
Jeffrey Elwan? I don't think he's on there. Helen Erickson?
Aye.
Jan Mulder?
Aye.
J.J. Lamb?
Aye.
Joel Ireland?
Yes.
Julie Rigoli?
Aye.
Ken Scoville?
Yes.
Kathy Kubisch?
Aye.
Peter Steer?
Aye.
Savannah McDonald?
Aye.
Peter Steer? Oh, I'm sorry.
Aye.
Steve Grady?
Aye.
Terry Majewski?
Aye.
Tim Haggard?
Aye.
Motion passes 15-0.
Thank you very much, everyone. Okay, item 7 is reports from City of Tucson, Pima County, and City of South Tucson staff. Now, county and city folks, if you have other items on the agenda, just please report here under items that aren't covered in those later things. So 7A is City of Tucson, Historic Preservation Office. Corinne?
Hi, Terry. I think I'm... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Corinne.
Yeah, I was going to say Dan's going to give some updates just on some other items that are not listed on the agenda later.
Okay.
Great. Go for it, Corinne. Dan. Thanks, Terry. So wanted to provide the group an update on a couple of opportunities for feedback on some upcoming code proposals. First one were the corridor redevelopment tools, which we came in and presented to you on, I think, last meeting. We are currently kind of finalizing the proposal. We'll be sending out notice for some public meetings on that coming up late October, early November, so be on the outlook for those coming up. There is some changes we're making related to adaptive reuse. There was a bill passed back in the spring, House Bill 2297, which requires municipalities to make some changes to their zoning code. This is something that's largely already allowed by our zoning code, but because of the terminology in there and some of the kind of specifics of it, it does require us to make some changes. So next week we're having a public meeting to kind of just discuss the parameters of that. And then that will be moving forward with the formal process, which will include public hearings with both the Planning Commission and the Mayor and Council. And then the third one was just related to accessory dwelling units. Again, we presented on this with your group a while back. But that, went through our Planning Commission. This is based also on another House Bill, 2720. And that'll be going to Mayor and Council for a public hearing on October 22nd. So those are some code updates. We're also, just to let everyone here know, Fort Lowell Historic Preservation Board, Zoning Board, is working on their design guidelines. So they've had a couple meetings where they've reviewed that. I think they're on their second or third iteration right now, and they're working with staff and working with their group to really update their design guidelines. So wanted to give you guys a notification that that's kind of working through its process. We'll have another meeting in a couple weeks or so to continue to review those. And then on top of that, just one other thing we wanted to start doing is making sure that you're updated on kind of Section 106 consultation that's going on with the city. So right now the city has a lot of capital projects, especially projects and projects that have HUD funding in housing and community development. So wanted to just put a couple of those on your radar, for potential kind of feedback, that you could provide. First one is, Tucson House, rehab. So this is basically, the Tucson House, obviously. There's, abatement going on, interior demolition and renovation, as well as kind of, it's a public housing to a voucher conversion. It's a big project. That currently, we reached out to SHPO. There was a no adverse effect concurrence from them, but we still need to do tribal and stakeholder consultation, and then also we'll be kind of creating stakeholder letters for compliance on Section 106. So be on the outlook for that. Dunbar Pavilions Rehab. So we've had a number of these that we're looking at that will likely have Section 106. So again, putting that on your radar. There's some rehab of the Dunbar Pavilions, which is on West 2nd Street in Dunbar Spring. And that's, there's some exterior rehab. There's a lot of interior rehab. So that'll be coming through. Putting in a hawk next to the Milagro site, just north of Oracle, that's one that we've determined will need full Section 106 consultation. So that'll be coming through, and we'll update you as these kind of go through. And then there's a change to the roof on the Krakow Towers on 5411 East Lee Street. That'll also require full Section 106 consultation. And then the final one is one that you may have seen notification on. It's Mission Manor Pool. And that was, basically a pool and bathhouse, where they were doing some renovations for parks. Initially it thought it had been potentially eligible, but worked with SHPO to determine that it wasn't. It really wasn't in a National Register Historic District, a preservation zone, or a neighborhood preservation zone. So it was determined to have no adverse effect, but there is an opportunity for a comment on that. So if you do have comments, please, reach out to, Rolanda, at Housing and Community Development by October 15th. Thank you.
Okay, Dan, I was just going to mention that a number of these have already come through plans review and are likely to come through again.
Yes, yes.
And so commissioners, if you're interested, you can go back to the recordings of the plans review subcommittee and hear more detail, because even though there's a little detail in the legal action reports and the minutes, you know, these are coming through plans review, especially I recall the Tucson House and some others. So often we see these in a courtesy review long before they come back for their formal review. So thanks, Dan, for that. And Corin, did you have anything to add? Oh, before we have any questions, Corin, did you have anything to add, or can I take these questions? Okay, I'll take the questions. Carlos, you're first. You want to go ahead?
Yeah. Was there a 106 for the Norte Sur project, the ETOD?
For the proposed bus routes?
Yeah, the ETOD is a federal project, right? And Ian had mentioned that it had been sent in, but I didn't know if anything came back on that.
I would defer to DTM. I see Jorge's in the meeting. But there's two elements. There's the land use planning component and then the transportation proposed transit route. And I'm not sure if they are at that stage yet of doing Section 106 for the transit line.
Yes, I can provide a quick update. So Ian and I met with Dan a couple of weeks ago, and the draft 106 consultation letter is still with FTA, so they have not heard back. So once they receive comments, then that will move forward. But there has not been any official distribution of 106 notifications. The draft letter has been sent to FTA, and they're still waiting for comments.
Okay, thanks, everybody.
Okay, thank you. And then, Ken, you're next.
Yes, hi, Daniel. A question on the House Bill 2297. I'm up to speed on the ADU, but can you give me a little quick overview on this adaptive use?
Yeah, of course, Ken. So basically what it does, it speaks to buildings. It doesn't speak to parcels or zoning, but it basically says that a municipality must allow for up to 10% of its commercial buildings to be reused as multifamily housing. We already allow for multifamily housing in our commercial zones. So really, and we have a lot of adaptive reuse tools that would kind of align with what they're trying to do. So it really was intended, I think, for municipalities that don't allow for multifamily in their commercial zones. There is a requirement for 10% affordable housing that is really more restrictive than what our current code does for adaptive reuse. But because it's framed in buildings and because it's framed in in that 10% adaptive reuse, we do have to make changes to our zoning code to allow for this. It basically would just be another avenue for the redevelopment of existing adaptive reuse buildings. We don't see it having a huge impact just because you can already kind of do all of this stuff with our zoning code. But again, something that we are required to do by state law.
Okay, and that's sort of citywide. And I was just running my head quickly. Not a lot of commercial buildings that are on the National Register for things like that. Most things, I'm thinking of a Country Club Market and a few other things, but not most of it's residential nature, commercial. All right, thank you.
Of course, thanks.
Okay. If there are no other questions for the city report, let's go on to 7B, which is Pima County Conservation Lands and Resources, Cultural Resources and Heritage Preservation. Mouthful. Ian. Yeah.
Thanks, Terry. So with respect to time, we're going to defer our time because most of the actually, for this month, all the items that we were going to cover are agendized throughout the report. So we'll be back with normal project updates at the next meeting.
Great. Thank you, Ian. 7C is City of South Tucson. Joshua, are you here today? I don't see him. Do you, Carla? I don't think Joshua is on.
No, I don't see him.
Yeah, we'll go on to 7D, which is Tucson Department of Transportation and Mobility. And we know that Jorge's here. Do you want to report anything else for us, Jorge?
Yes, real quickly. Commissioner Lozano mentioned the Tucson Norte Sur plan. During mid-September, I did submit to Commissioner Lozano and to Garla for distribution to the commission the draft phase two of the Tucson Norte Sur plan. They were seeking comments. Those comments were due on Friday, October the 4th. So that was sent in mid-September. And then I also yesterday I did double check with Commissioner Lozano if he receives notices from the City of Tucson regarding mobility projects, and there's a First Avenue Improvement Project in-person and virtual open house events taking place. The in-person will take place this evening at Donna Liggins Recreation Center, and then the virtual meeting open house is tomorrow from 6 to 7 p.m., again, for the First Avenue Improvement Project. And that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Jorge? Okay, if not, let's move on to item 8, Commission Subcommittee, Other Committee, Council, and Commission Status Reports. We'll start with 8A, which is Plans Review Subcommittee. Michael, do you have a brief update for us?
Yes, Madam Chair. As Dan mentioned, a lot of the projects that I mentioned have gone through the Plans Review Subcommittee. Tomorrow at the subcommittee meeting, the subcommittee will be looking at the Benedictine Monastery for some rehabilitation work that is going on there. They will also be reviewing the Himmel Park Library, which they are proposing some rehabilitation and some expansion. West University will be looking at the Capstone Project, which is a big project. It's not yet got into PRS yet, to Plans Review Subcommittee, but West University is going to review that on next Tuesday. So those are the big projects we have now that is going on with Plans Review Subcommittee.
Okay, are there any questions? Okay, thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Item 8B is Downtown Neighborhoods and Residents Council. Commissioner Haggard.
Hi, this is Commissioner Haggard. We had our meeting on this past Monday. We didn't have anybody come in to speak. Some of the follow-ups were to the last meeting. There's still there's some folks looking to get the mural on the side of the Benjamin Supply building. the wall and the mural repaired. And so there's some folks looking into that and what the possibility of having that occur. But no definite answers about that. Sounds like the Pima County's put on hold making any decisions about the downtown or about the library closures for right now. I think it's from what it sounds like is maybe the rollout of that information was a little premature, and they didn't do some of the prior work or conversations about community work around potentially closing some of the libraries, one of those being the downtown Tucson library as a potential place to close down for budget cuts. So that's, I think, been punted to the future. We're looking to get somebody to talk maybe from the Department of Transportation this next meeting or in the next couple meetings about the delay of the downtown links. That's was supposed to end this past summer and then was delayed to the end of this year. Now it's looking like it's been punted to maybe beginning of next summer, a completion date, but we don't know. So that was pretty much what the meeting compiled of, and there'll be another meeting next month.
Okay, thank you, Tim. Item 8C is Historic Landscape Subcommittee, Commissioner Grady.
So the Historic Landscape Subcommittee did not meet since the previous meeting, so there's nothing to report.
Okay, thank you. Item 8D, Transportation Subcommittee, Commissioner Lozano.
Thanks. So as Jorge mentioned, on the Norte Sur, the Phase 2 draft came out, and it looks really good, and so we decided to not issue any comments on it because we've already commented on it before. So we'll just have to see how it plays out. Let me think. So TEP, the update on that is City of Tucson and also Underground Arizona have both filed for a rehearing with the Arizona Corporation Commission. It is, so if that fails, it goes back to the zoning administrator, at which point we will submit a comment, and we already approved a letter for that. And then if that's denied, then TEP would probably appeal to mayor and council. And so this is why we have been CCing mayor and council on all our letters so that they're aware of our position. And, let's see. I believe that's all I have. Thanks a lot. Oh, wait, one more thing. Oh, RTA, Commissioner Lamb wasn't here last month, and she attended the most recent meeting. Commissioner Lamb, did you have anything on RTA?
I did take some notes. The RTA board has went ahead and passed the motion to take the list as it exists right now and, move that to Board of Supervisors and then to the public for public comment period. And they also discussed, had a motion and which was approved to have a longer public comment period than maybe they were going to originally, and to put the list for voter approval on a November 2025 ballot.
So then, JJ, then should the commission write a letter at some point or about the Vail project or?
Yes, definitely that. And I think another letter regarding public input, the public comment period, would be appropriate. Some of the conversation or discussion centered around how, the length of time of the public comments. And I would say that the officials sitting around the table were definitely in favor of a longer comment period, which is a good thing. But how many public meetings there would be, I was actually pretty shocked when there was kind of a, not a vote or anything, but a bit of an informal consensus that two or three public meetings in unincorporated Pima County would be sufficient. That's a huge area. Anyway, I think if it's appropriate that advocating for more public comment opportunities in unincorporated Pima County would be good. And overall, you know, you can hardly, to my mind, have too many opportunities for public comment.
And what would be the time frame for this, JJ and Carlos? This meeting or the next meeting we vote, or what would we do?
You know what? I can flesh out those notes that I took a little more and email them to you. I feel like we could do this at the next meeting, and that could also give other commissioners time if they wanted to go ahead and listen or watch on YouTube that meeting. And then I'll flesh out, I have like a one page, really brief description, but, yeah, I think the next meeting is fine. I'm going to guess that the public comment period might start in December, but I'm not positive about that.
Yeah. Well, why don't you and Carlos put your heads together and look at those notes and see what the best motion would be. I mean, a lot of times transportation will do motions that they don't become actionable for letters until mm-hmm. things. So think about the scope of that motion for next time, and that would be great. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions, other questions for Carlos or JJ? Anyway, thank you for that. Let's move on then to item 8E, which is Commission on Equitable Housing and Development. This is Commissioner McDonald's group.
I wasn't able to watch that this month. I apologize. So no report. I'll catch you all up next time.
Okay, thank you. Item 8F is Budget Subcommittee, and that's me. We have a meeting, I think, next week, and that would be for Ricky and Helen, correct, Helen? And you'll see the brief agenda for that, but we need to get going on thinking, planning for at least the budgetary aspects in general for upcoming events that we're responsible for putting on or contributing to. And we also need to move on some items that could not be approved out of our last budget cycle because there was some misunderstanding about how soon you have to submit requests before the end of the city fiscal year. But I think I was fortunate enough to meet with Carla and another one of her colleagues, and we worked this out, and we have a much better schedule now. So just a heads up on that. Okay, item 8G is Outreach and Training. Commissioner Elwand isn't here. JJ, do you have anything to report?
This is JJ. I am working on an agenda, and we did not meet in the last period since the last commission meeting, so I don't have anything to report except that I am in the process of setting up a meeting here in October, and I'll be reaching out to the other committee members.
Yeah, the subcommittee members, great.
Subcommittee, yeah.
Okay, perfect. And one thing that we might want to distribute to commissioners in an update to the handbook that was passed out some meetings ago is the training that was provided to Historic Preservation Zone Advisory Boards that some commissioners attended by the City Preservation Office, and it was, some of you said it was quite good. So Helen has that, so you guys could talk about that. Or that could even be a good training for us to have or be based on or something. Just wanted to mention that as an idea. Item H is event subcommittee, and I am not sure why I had that on. Oh, because the event subcommittee is still meeting on planning for the big celebration next year in August, and I just want to keep it on the agenda so I don't forget. And we haven't, our partners that we work with from the Tucson Presidio, I haven't heard back from them yet, and Ricky is not on, so we'll ask Ricky next month to update us on if people are putting events on the calendar I told you about. That is, that there's a website with calendar events that relate to this big anniversary by different preservation and historical groups. Okay, so item 9 is Pima County update on proposed historic zone code text amendment, revisions and schedule. This is Courtney Rose. Hi, Courtney.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. We met on October 4th. I met with commissioners in a formal study session, and I think we had a productive discussion and review, and commissioners conducted a complete analysis of the code during this session. And following our discussion on October 4th, I received all the comments that were in writing from the commissioners by October 11th, and I'm currently updating the current draft to create a new revised draft. And next steps would be to complete this updated draft, send out a copy to commissioners, to the commission, and send a copy to the Pima County attorneys. The Pima County attorneys may have questions and comments. They may want some clarification, and at that point, we'll reach out to the commission if we need to have another meeting. Following a good draft that will go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, we have not scheduled yet the time at which the draft will go to public hearing at the Planning and Zoning Commission. We're hoping for the end of November, but it just really depends on how everything goes with the review process over the next month. Thank you.
Courtney, before I call on you, Ken, hold on. Courtney, I think 9:20 was our special meeting. Carla, can you confirm that it wasn't 10:04? Is that right, Carla?
It's, yes, 10:20.
Or 9:20.
I'm sorry, 9:20.
9:20.
Yeah, and that was, we approved that LAR at the beginning of the meeting. It was very basic. So, I mean, the LAR, not the meeting. The meeting was intense. So, okay. Ken, and then
you.
I'll call him Hilton. Yeah. Ken?
Yes. Hi, Courtney. That was a very, and I followed up. That was a very good meeting. There were a few little odds and ends at the very end. This revised draft that you're sending out, will it also sort of fine comb, how would I say, look at those little nuances? Were there corrections back there, those very last few places?
The last few places of, yeah, everything that was discussed, right?
Right. Did we sort of,
yes,
rush through a little bit at that final part?
Yes. Okay. So there were a couple sections that we didn't get to. We kind of jumped to the end. If there were there any formal comments on those particular sections, I'll take a look to make sure everything's in sync with what commissioners presented.
Okay. Yeah. I would just say that I think everybody's pretty happy, at least from my standpoint, that the main body of the document's line, but I just wanted to make sure there were any end pieces or little things at the end that there was a problem or a conflict, possible conflict.
Okay. Thank you.
And one last question. I don't know if this is appropriate now. I was hoping to get a little update about the Atkins House, you know, with Jody not being here anymore and all of this. Do we have an idea of where we are with the Atkins House? Ian came on.
Yes, Ian. Ian has an update.
thank you for the follow-up. We continue to work with the city and also awaiting a little bit more direction with our leadership. I know that county administration has met with city officials and understanding options that the county has and its responsibilities. So we hope to, by the next meeting, have some follow-up for you of the decisions. But there is progressing, and there have been some meetings at that higher level that we're just waiting on the information to kind of flow down to us.
Okay, because I actually did my first Fort Law walk on Monday, and you see it all short. It's become an instructive part of the tour now, but I would like to get that resolved. So I'll be watching for it.
Thank you. Thanks for keeping us on our toes.
Oh, I see it all the time. I think that was okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ken. Okay, Helen?
Yes, Courtney, we did not work on the section about terms and appointments for commissioners, and I am thinking that rather than have the entire commission work on that perhaps mm-hmm. the Pima Prospers team that was working with you could take a close look at that and perhaps bring it back to us.
Ian, is that acceptable?
Yeah, so Helen, I'm going to chime in. So the terms, obviously, there's a lot of voices on this one issue, and we're also looking at the legal responsibility for a public commission and understanding what state requirements are in terms of term limits for public commissions. So the county attorneys are advising us on what the minimum requirements are for those term limits. We will definitely continue to engage the commission in that, and we're responsive to the comments and the input always. But we do need county attorney direction to lead us and to provide a baseline of where we can even start that conversation. It's not the first time we've talked about it. And so by no means are we closing discussion on it, but at the same time, we need to adhere to certain regulatory requirements that I don't quite understand, and we're seeking direction on that before we continue to engage the commission.
Sure. Now, when you have legal requirements, perhaps the group here that would be best qualified to discuss that with would be the Pima Prospers group.
We defer to the commission, whatever delegation you guys would like to, the team, I guess, to work on that one issue. We're happy to defer to the commission in its interest. So it's up to you guys.
Yeah, Helen, we can wait until they have it ready for us to review, and we don't need a motion on that. I can just say go ahead and assign it to that group because it makes sense.
Perfect. Thank you.
You know, or something like that. So, okay, yep. Ken, is that all you had, Helen? Yeah,
yes.
Okay, we need to move forward. Ken, can you be brief?
Sure. It'll be real quick. Ian, is there any complexity because what the county may want for terms versus what the city may want for terms of service for the commission?
Again, we need to look at what the minimum basic requirements are. I don't know if the city has done that exercise, but that's what our attorneys are looking at right now, and we should get that information. And then we're happy to share with the commission and the city.
There would want to be some consensus if they were both the same or aligned the same. That was my
sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, thank you. All right, let's go ahead then and move on to hold on just a second here. All right, item 10 is City of Tucson Silverbell Road Widening Project, the 404 violation update. Ian, could you give us a brief update on that?
Sure, just a very quick update that since our last meeting, it was a push to an October 1st consultation meeting, which did occur. It was hosted by the City of Tucson. That was the initial consultation meeting for all consulting parties of the overall Silverbell Widening Project. In attendance were obviously the City of Tucson, Pima County, representatives from the Army Corps of Engineers, State Historic Preservation Office, Town of Marana, Arizona State Museum, Tana Atum, Pasco Yaqui, Gila River, Salt River, Pima Maricopa Indian Community, and the Hopi Tribe. At that meeting, it was an informational session. It was a presentation to the consulting parties about the sequence of events as they occurred, with requests for input from consulting parties to begin a dialogue that obviously will continue. The action item that came from that meeting was that the city's contractor, Westland Resources, would be preparing a damage assessment plan that would then go to the regulatory parties to review prior to going out for consultation. So that plan has been prepared. It has been submitted for regulatory review. It's currently under regulatory review, and then it will go out for consultation. I'll have more at the next meeting, but that's kind of where we stand right now. Corin and Dan, did you have any additional information you guys wanted to provide?
Thanks, Ian. Yeah, I think that gets at kind of where we're at today. So okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, thank you, Ian. Okay, let's move on to item 11. City of Tucson Historic Preservation Officer vacancy. Corin, do you have anything to update on that?
Sure. I'll just say that we really appreciate the feedback from the commission from folks who reviewed the proposed job description, and we've integrated that feedback into the job description for Historic Preservation Officer. And we hope to post that recruitment in the next several weeks, as this is a really critical vacancy for the city. And, we really want to fill this position as soon as possible so that we can then start to get that person onboarded, and also so that they can start making some hires to grow our historic preservation team, which will be one of their first tasks, is to hire several positions to augment our team's capacity.
Okay, thank you. Ken, do you want to go first, and then Joel?
Sure. I'm assuming this would be the appropriate time to mention this, is that I've been doing, and along with Helen, doing a little research, and the staffing up. This is very interesting to me. The new preservation officer will be involved with hiring additional staff?
Yes. So there's at least two positions that we hope they will hire for lead planner and potentially a principal planner for that team.
Okay. Just real quickly, San Diego, we had a long discussion with them. They currently have 7 planners and a staff archaeologist, and they have some really interesting ways that they review even properties that may be potentially listed for the National Register. Phoenix, you probably already know, has 7 employees right now. And then the other thing that was interesting, when I talked to El Paso, and they have a wonderful inventory of Henry Trost buildings, because he lived there and practiced there extensively, and she told me, we have 2 people because El Paso doesn't care very much about the city government, about historic preservation. So if we've had 1, where are we on the planet? So hopefully we can get enough people on so that we can do a thorough job in the future. So that's just a couple of comments about staffing from other cities. Later on, I can provide that too. Thank you.
That would be great, Ken. We'd love any input or data you have, information from talking to other jurisdictions. That's something we've been doing as well. Dan and I have had conversations with a few other peer jurisdictions, Phoenix, and we just spoke to Albuquerque yesterday. So, yeah, we're doing some of that assessment as well. So we'd love any research you've done.
Sure, I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Joel, you're on mute.
Yes, thank you. And I apologize. I feel like I missed something. Did Jody resign? I thought we had this person on.
No, Jody resigned. You weren't on meetings for the last little bit, but Jody resigned. Yes. And okay. So they're hiring a new preservation officer and hoping to expand the staff.
Okay, well, yeah. That's great if we can expand it. I'm on board. I just didn't know that had happened. I apologize. So it's my fault. Just wanted to catch up. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Anyone else quickly? Okay, if not, let's move on to item 12, City of Tucson and Pima County Preservation Program and Process. And this was an item requested at our last meeting, so we're going to go ahead and hear first from the City of Tucson and then from Pima County. And this could be I've got 20 minutes for each thing, but we're already almost at 1 o'clock, so let's see where we get with this, and we can continue the discussion if needed, because I'm sure there will be lots of questions. Okay, you want to go ahead? 12A is City of Tucson. Corin, did you want to share a PowerPoint?
Yeah, we have a presentation. Dan's going to walk through this. But just to kind of clarify or set the scope for this discussion, we're really looking at, and I think our understanding of what the commission wanted to understand better was our process for city-funded projects, how we are doing historic and archaeological review, and sort of that cultural compliance process for capital projects. So that's what we focused on, but happy to come back another time if you want like kind of a more expansive view of just preservation processes in general that would apply to private sites. But we really focused this on capital projects, so parks projects, projects in the right of way, water projects, things like that. Dan, do you want to go through this?
Before you start, Dan, Corin, can you provide this presentation to Carla at Boards and Commissions so she can provide it to the commission?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. And the same, Ian, for you. Thank you. Okay, go ahead. Thank you, Dan.
All right. Great. Excellent. So, I'll get started with this. So as Corin mentioned, I really just wanted to talk through kind of, the requirements for the review of city projects and how it works in public lands and right of way and things of that sort. So, really everything's guided by the Administrative Directive AD 1.07-7. Which really is for the protection of archaeological and historical resources and city projects. Oops, I changed that by accident. And really the purpose of this directive is for city policies and procedures for the protection of archaeological and historic resources that may be associated with city projects or work activity of city staff. As a certified local government, the SHPO and Arizona State Museum, we have the ability to self-regulate ourselves, and that's much of what this AD is doing. It's laying out how we uphold, our duties. So the two areas that we look at related to this are really related to archaeological resources. City of Tucson owned properties or any private or public project within the right of way, as well as the historic resources, which is city owned structures and sites within an HPZ, a historic preservation zone, a individual historic landmark, or National Register historic districts. Talk a little bit about the archaeological portion, and then we'll talk a little bit about the more kind of architectural historic portion. So City of Tucson has 11 archaeological sensitivity zones spread throughout the city. We have those mapped to our Map Tucson. So as we have project managers or whatever are going through and looking at their project, they're aware that they would be within those, and that immediately kind of triggers them to reach out to us, the Historic Preservation Office. Per that AD, any work on city-owned property requires a review of archaeological and historical resources. We have an on-call list of qualified archaeological firms to which we kind of act as the intermediary between the project managers and the departments that are doing the projects and those consulting firms to help them with those archaeological services. From that, develop a monitoring and discovery plan related to those projects that do need, that are archaeologically sensitive. Those requests basically come through. We have a form, which is a cultural resources clearance form for that. And really it goes through.
Oh my God. I was awful nervous, you know, so it transferred some of that nervousness to her.
And so from that, it really kind of goes through the different types of work. You have the class one survey, which is really a literature and site file search. I know a lot of you know this and are aware of this. As well as, you know, for certain sites that do have a lot of archaeological sensitivity, going through and doing the class three survey, related to that, which leads to an end of field report, with recommendations on, you know, having a monitoring discovery plan and moving forward with that. A lot of projects come through, they're analyzed, and need a monitor on site whenever there's any sort of ground disturbing work that happens, as well as data recovery. And that's really kind of what comes out of that cultural resource clearance form when people submit that to us. Yeah, Ken, you have your hand up? Oh, sorry, you're muted.
Ken, you're still muted.
Try it. It's slow today. I guess the question for me, if this is all in place, what happened on Silverbell? What was the miss? Because if whatever you want to change or improve in the future, I'm sure you've asked yourself that. But as the commission, like, what didn't work with this process?
Yeah, so Ken, so we have a slide in here that talks about process improvements, but and there were some areas that were gaps. There was a class three study that was done there, an end of field report. But sometimes what ends up happening is with turnover and project managers changing over time and things of that sort. You know, there are kind of, you know, things that have been missed in the past. We have some suggestions on, you know, what those are and ways to move forward in order to address that. But that's essentially what happened.
Okay. Well, it's down to the first problem with communication is the assumption that it has taken place. And normally with most things, it's a lack of that communication, whether there's been changes, but it assumed that it was done and it wasn't. That's normally the problem. Thanks.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I'll go through this. Thanks, Ken. So this is essentially the process on how it works. You know, a project manager identifies the property. If the property is within an archaeological sensitivity site, it's in a historic district, if it's city owned, et cetera. From there, they submit that cultural clearance form. Earlier, the better in the process, with the relevant documentation to the HPO. Our historic preservation officer sends out that documentation and requests a bid from our on-call. And then they kind of guide that process. So once the estimate is received, it's forwarded to our project manager, so they can look at it, make sure that it matches. The historic preservation officer is there to help guide them in that decision. And then once they want to move forward, they issue an order to proceed. And they'll work with that archaeological firm to set up a monitor, do whatever their class three or their class one or whatever really needs to happen for that. It is that that firm that also helps with coordinating with the Arizona State Museum as well. If a permit is needed for that, they will be the one that helps with that. And then there will ultimately be a report at the end of that process of what comes out from that. As I mentioned, if there is a permit that's required related to this, there is a permitting process through the Arizona State Museum as well, who permits the work within a known site with the Arizona Antiquities Act. So if the work is not within a known site, it's not required. However, a lot of times it is, and those permits usually take about a month or so to go through. So again, a lot of this really needs to be front loaded on the very beginning of projects, so you can anticipate the time that it takes, so it doesn't actually interrupt long term kind of you know, the timeline when you're trying to get some of them done. We have a lot of parks projects going on right now, a lot of housing projects. It's really important to do those early. So that's archaeological. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Terry.
Dan, could you go back one slide?
Sure.
Please. I just want to point out that so these PMs can be from various departments within the city. So to my mind, the flaw here is that the proponent is driving the project, not the regulator, who's the HPO, right? And so they can choose. It's strongly suggested that they submit this and talk to the HPO, but I think there needs to be a process where very early in the project, there's an intent to do this project. So the HPO is on board with this and consult with, you know, ideally that person's going to have archaeological expertise, or there will be someone on staff so that this can be monitored from the very beginning. Because it can't be the decision of the PM to decide if it needs to be cleared culturally. Right? Because they have a stake in that project. And then again, there's a problem with PM notifies HPO if they want to move forward. Well, it's not their decision. They might have to move forward, right? Because they're never going to want the costs that are associated with that. So anyway, that's, I hope that's in the process improvement.
Yeah, no. Thanks, Terry. Yeah, we're working on several kind of procedural changes. And things that, and ways to kind of make sure that that happens and happens early. So yeah, no, that's great feedback. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, no worries. So that's the archaeological permitting process. Also there is the review for historic resources. So for the city, a review is required for anything that's designated a historic resource. So there can be water towers, pump houses, et cetera, that are historic. There are sites that are located within a historic preservation zone or a historic landmark or in our, one of our historic districts. And then there's properties that are eligible for listing and individually eligible. And those are sites that we need to, that we have to run through the historic process as well. It's really up to the historic preservation officer, to review those projects and determine if it's, if it requires historic review. A lot of times that happens in consultation with SHPO or consultation with some of our consultants as well. I'll stop right here. I see your hand up.
Yeah, Ken is first and then Helen. Go ahead, Ken. Yeah.
Okay, I just want to add, is talking to some other cities, they seem to be really emphasizing, as cities are more focused on historic preservation, on potential buildings and their eligibility. So it would be good for the HPO or somewhere in this saying that be an ongoing process as time and years go past. What is out there that we should be a little bit aware of, like on First Avenue with the project that's going to go forward with the remake of First Avenue. I'm sure the Boondocks would be eligible and things like that. So there needs to be some front loading of what's out there now that we need to check on. And then also, I think we're missing landscapes, because view sheds and all of that, what is this going to potentially do to an historic view shed? And I just noticed as an example, the train depot used to have a beautiful view of the Catalina Mountains. And now there's that huge apartment complex. And I missed that one as it went through and all of that. But that could have scaled it or done in three sections or still give the developer the density. But it's a monolith now. And then eventually, hopefully, we get something preserved with the Campbell Avenue Farm. But that view shed is critical. View shed from the farm is one of the last timeless view sheds. We have the Catalina Mountains that we've been there when the U of A bought the farm from the family that was farming there. So all those things need to be sort of incorporated or at least put on the radar.
Thank you. Helen?
Yes, I would agree with Ken. And one of my concerns is in your very first slide, you include parks, but you don't include streetscapes. And one of the places that very often alterations to impact the historic streetscape and subsequently in the combination with archaeology, I think those have to be looked at very carefully, and I'm sure our transportation subcommittee would support that as well. And then my second point is, when you're talking about review of historic resources, there is a standard process one of the things the historic preservation officer is supposed to do or supervise is to create an ongoing inventory, not just of historic resources, not just things that have been listed in the National Register, but potentially historic resources, which means that there's an ongoing project for buildings, usually someplace between 40 to 45 years of age. And those need to be triggered as well, because something that just happens to be very close to that, quote, 50-year rule, which is not actually a rule but a guide, those need to be considered too. So I think that has to be somewhere in the criteria or process for the review of historic resources.
Well, Helen, that was included in your comments on the HPO description, and I alerted Corin to that, not just Section 106, but Section 110 of the National Historic Preservation Act that also allows for that pre-planning, knowing what the changing view is of the resources for which you're responsible or could be potentially responsible.
Correct. I'm just looking at this as something that Dan may be presenting to other people within the city. And so I think that those two points between the streetscapes and the ongoing inventory are very important things.
Yeah. And I think what we can do without, I think we should maybe hold some of our comments. Mm-hmm. We'll have a copy of this and we can then provide some more feedback or else we will never get on to the next presentation. So I think, and there'll be other times definitely for talking about it, maybe the next meeting for that. So so go ahead.
Okay.
I'm finished.
Thanks,
Helen. Okay, I'll try to be quick. So if it is one that is determined to a property that's determined needs a review, this is the process related to that. So Historic Preservation Office consults with the project manager during that design process to review its consistency with the U.S. Secretary of Interior standards, if there are any HPZ design guidelines or things of that sort that they would have to adhere to. Those projects are submitted through our TDC online for review and scheduled for review with their appropriate bodies. So if they do need to go through the local historic preservation board, like an Armory Park or something of that sort, it would go through that, as well as the plans review subcommittee for that, and any other kind of for the review of that project. From that, the HPO would, the Historic Preservation Officer issues a letter to that project manager with conditions that are based off of those reviews. And then those plans later would be reviewed by the HPO as they come through to make sure that there's consistency with those conditions and that they're meeting that through that process. So this is part of our kind of how we're dealing with that consistency throughout is building it into our permitting system to make sure that every time something comes in, is resubmitted, that the historic group is there to review those to make sure that it's meeting those conditions, it's meeting the intent of all of those reviews that have come before it. So that's the existing kind of process of what's in place now. As I had mentioned earlier, we are looking at process improvements, and this is just kind of an example of some of them, a sampling. There are other things we're looking at as well. The first one really is training. So providing training to project managers and other city staff that are managing that work that are compliant with the AD. And this is in different departments, and it's making sure that in the city that if you are a project manager, even if it's something that's not permitted, you understand what your requirements are. And doing this on a rolling basis to make sure that, if we do it once now and then we don't do it for another 3 years, but there's turnover within that, we miss those people so they don't understand that this is the process they have to go through. So continual training and training throughout the city to project managers is going to be really important as we move forward and make sure that we do this. We are also looking at Section 106 training We have one set up for December coming up in a month or so, and do this with staff from ourselves, but also housing and community development, transportation, mobility, as well as parks and rec, and any other kind of people in the city that want to join. One of the things that we've noticed is that as we've started to do a lot more capital projects, especially with housing and community development, instead of us being the consulting party for Section 106, which we were a lot in the past, now we're actually sending it out for consultation. So it's something that has been a bit of a shift in the last 5 years or so, and something we really need to make sure that everyone is on board with and everyone understands the processes. Ken, your hands up.
Yeah, and I thought this would be appropriate. I've been around too long. 30 years ago, the city of Tucson, you said, Foundation for Leadership. And they took mid-managers and people from all the different departments, and they circled through all different aspects of the city, and they spent one day with me about historic resources and preservation and all those things. So I'm not trying to get myself a gig, but I want people to think about reinstituting something like this, because people from other departments said, gosh, I never knew any of these kind of things. And it gets them to think about the city in a much more holistic way and how everything integrates and works together. So I've even mentioned it to powers to be higher up, but it would be just as good to have some kind of program that instituted again, because it was well received at the time. But budgets and money and all that kind of stuff and time, it fell away like so many human endeavors that are doing a good job and then they vanish away. Just a plug.
Thanks, Ken. Next one is a centralized internal city website that has information and all those cultural resources in one place. One of the things that we've been, a lot of it was up to emails and communication and things of that sort, making sure that all those resources are one place, as well as training materials that are easy to find and easy to understand, so videos and things of that sort. We are also continuing to utilize and refine we have this capital improvement project review process built into our permitting system. This is started about 6 months ago, and all of those capital projects that require a permit are now being put in and come in at design of different stages, so 30, 60, 90%. It allows for us to catch things earlier on in the process and make sure that historic is a part of that, so we can tell them they have to go through that cultural clearance process early on instead of catching it later on in the process. So again, making sure that coordination occurs early and often. And then we are looking at, this as an opportunity with the new historic preservation officer to really start to look at the department as a whole and how it can function at a higher capacity. So updating our cultural administrative directive to reflect current roles, responsibilities, and procedures. It has to be updated. It hasn't been updated in a while. Making sure but working with that new HPO to do so. Creating a historic preservation plan for Tucson, including cultural resource management strategies, something we really need to do. And then on top of that, just again, as Corin had mentioned and we talked about in one of our previous items, really just making sure that we have, the archaeological expertise, making sure that we have the support and the resources within our department to meet the needs of the community for that. So that's what we have. I'm sorry, I think I went over time, but hopefully that was helpful.
Well, thank you, Dan. And I'm thinking if you could provide that to Carla to distribute, and then I think I can send an email to commissioners or have Carla send it to provide further feedback for me to convey to you, and be the subject of further discussion. This is, thank you very much for this. And thanks for thinking about the process improvements and so forth. And we have, let's take one question here, Joel, and then we have to move on. Joel?
Yes, just one quick question. How does this plan interface with the rest of the permitting process for building? That's the question. How does that interface? How and when does it interface with, say, obtaining permits or certificates of occupancy or whatever other requirements are there?
Yeah, for city projects, it's a part of that process. So it comes as a capital improvement project. We're there for that review. You really see the interface when private projects, it happens when it's in the right of way. And if there's any encroachment into the right of way, and then a lot of times what we end up doing is requiring cultural clearance for those and review, as well as anything that's, again, within those historic preservation zones, is a historic landmark, those type of things. So that's where you start to see it with the private development. But we're happy to come back and talk more about that part of the process as well.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks very much, Dan and Corin. And we're going to go ahead and move on to item 12B, which is the presentation from Pima County. Go ahead, Ian, if you're ready. You there, Ian?
Yeah, sorry, I had done my mute. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. So just real quick, I want to we never actually get to introduce ourselves to you guys and a little bit of our background. So real quick, Courtney, Scott, and I are just going to tell you a little bit about ourselves and how we got to where we are and working at the county. So I was a classically trained academic archaeologist working for several years. I've been doing archaeology for over 25 years and shifted into contract archaeology, working here in the Tucson Basin and throughout the Southwest, and then moved into local government in 2012. And we tell you this just to give us a little bit of background about kind of our education and that it took a lot of learning about processes and about trial and error and about working for private organizations and academic organizations to really highlight, I think, the county's program in, I think, what the three of us have adopted in a creation that Linda worked 35 years to create. And so a lot of what you see today is a product of her great work. And Courtney, do you want to introduce yourself real quick?
Sure. Thank you. I'm Courtney Rose. I earned my doctorate in anthropology in 2001 from the University of Pittsburgh, specializing in archaeology and also Latin American studies and Andean archaeology. After working in South America, I moved to Tucson and worked for 6 years for Old Pueblo Archaeology Center. I worked in the fields in southern Arizona during that time and then moved to work for the county as cultural resources staff. And I've worked for the county for 17 years. And the first 12 of those, I focused on regulatory compliance. And then in the past 5, I've added the conservation lands management component. Thank you.
Scott?
Sure, thanks. My name is Scott O'Mack. I have an MA in anthropology from the University of Kentucky from longer ago than I care to admit, but I've been doing cultural resource management work for about 30 years. The last 26 years here in Tucson, I've worked for the county for about 3 years now. And before that, I worked for various consulting companies in Tucson, worked on a lot of projects for Pima County from the consultant side of the table. And here at Pima County, I work on compliance. I help out with management of the conservation lands that we're responsible for. And every chance I get, I do historical research on individual properties that we're concerned with.
Great. Thank you. All right. So to begin us off, I really want to highlight the fact that today's presentation is really emphasizing only half of the equation of what this group does. And that's really the regulatory compliance and the processes that go behind that. The second half is really the management and monitoring, and the two relate very well together, and we're happy to do a subsequent presentation on the management and monitoring because a lot of the regulatory work we do really comes together in this kind of center public education. We are public servants. Everything we do is for the public, and it behooves us and is quite important in every action we do on both the regulatory and the management side that we make it relatable, and we highlight what those benefits are for why these processes are in place. That elicits public support in what we do. That public support was resonated in our past bond initiatives that led to the acquisition of several of our conservation properties, including heritage sites. But the mission of who we are as the Cultural Resources Historic Preservation Office is that we're devoted to conserving and protecting the cultural and historic resources of Pima County and their cultural, scientific, educational, and aesthetic values. Through planning, research, informed science-driven conservation, and collaborative partnerships, we strive to ensure that the physical and cultural landscapes of our diverse community endure. And this office really focuses in on a model in which we operate as a centralized regulatory body for the entire county as opposed to a division. That really, its purpose is intended specifically for the department in which that division is located. So that is why we are once again looking to become established as an office in this kind of initial move into conservation lands and resources. We're technically a division because it was a like for like in coming from sustainability and conservation. But to really advance the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan and with the support of our administration, within this year, we are looking to reestablish ourselves as an office within CLR. So I'm going to take you through a little bit of the history of how we got to where we are in our processes. And it really began in 1983, similar to the creation of the commission in 1974. This was a reactionary effort by the Board of Supervisors. It was a commitment to saying that, amazingly, the county was going to comply with laws that existed, even though none really existed at the local level. They were limited to state and federal frameworks at that time. It noted a commitment to coordinate among different authorities, City of Tucson and so forth, contracting professional services, review and monitoring, and product cessation if necessary. This was really a commitment at the time, but without teeth. The county didn't have a historic preservation officer, nor did it have an archaeologist at the time. But again, it was reactionary in understanding that it needs to take into consideration this, which actually led to Linda's hiring later on in the 1980s as the first county archaeologist. The next major piece that came was the C317, and this is really the core of who we are today and what we do. It was established by the elected officials in 2008, and it's a top-down elected officials through county administration to all units of Pima County government. And this policy does, let me emphasize, apply to all departments and units of Pima County. It centralizes authority to the Cultural Resources Historic Preservation Office and requires all county departments to coordinate their actions with this group. It requires that all projects get cultural clearance, and it establishes a dotted line from the office to the county administration and Board of Supervisors. And it specifically did so with the understanding that the office may not always necessarily be in the organizational structure of the county directly under administration, that it may be, as it is today, under a department. And being in a department is fine from an organizational standpoint as long as that department and that department's head is aware that it has a responsibility to comply with the same rules and compliance procedures that all departments do. And so that if our director were to bypass or negate the need for regulatory compliance, that this group has the ability to ensure that compliance is met at the administrative or Board of Supervisors level. The next thing that came in is the policy basically sets forth what is needed, and Administrative Procedure 34-1 sets out how it's going to be done, and more importantly, who are the staff that are qualified to operate in this office and enforce the policy. And it requires that all staff are either permitted or qualified individuals with relevant cultural resource management experience under the supervision of permitted staff. And so this is the kind of decree that goes on that comes out of the county administration office that complements the Board of Supervisors resolution. The next layer of the onion really starts to dive into our planning, and I'm going to let Courtney talk about that and talk a little bit about private development and the layers of the onion that accompany the Board of Supervisors policy. Go ahead, Courtney.
Yes, and first talking about private development, we need to introduce the comprehensive plan, which is Pima Prospers for Pima County, and that it sets the primary overarching blueprint and guiding policies that influence future development. One of the main objectives of the comprehensive planning process is to protect cultural and natural resources, and the authorities come from the Arizona State statutes. Thank you.
Oops, there we go.
And these are a listing of some of the, in the zoning code, where cultural resources are included in requirements for review. For instance, the historic zone, also chapter 18.81, it requires staff review of grading or development plans, as well as fulfilling and completion of those cultural resources requirements, and also rezonings and specific plan reviews.
So that's the local, but the local is only one part of the equation, because local and state go together. And what's really important for the commission to understand is that the Arizona Antiquities Act is the state law that applies to all state, county, and municipal agencies and lands. So the county is required to not only comply to ensure that its own actions, regardless of land ownership, every county action is subject to compliance with the Arizona Antiquities Act. And then every action by anyone else on county lands is required to comply with the Arizona Antiquities Act. And so while we have archaeological sensitivity zones and we have planning tools, those are just planning tools. The process is dictated that any action requires compliance. It requires inventory. It requires assessment. It requires mitigation if necessary, monitoring if necessary. And it's not just known sites, because we live in a very rich cultural landscape in which the likelihood and the probability or the sensitivity of sites is not known until the construction phase. So we need to balance that and look at all of the resources that we have, and we'll showcase those in a second, to understand archaeological sensitivity and compliance. It also, how do we anticipate changes in the landscape and visual viewshed and all of these things that go into it. This is where the local policy and the state act come in harmony with each other, right? Because this is just the requirement for known sites, but sometimes you're not going to know that you're at an archaeological site until such time that you're in the middle of construction. And how do we deal with those situations and prepare for them? We also have the Arizona Burial Protection Laws, again, apply to all lands other than federal and Indian lands, state, local, and private. So then we move into qualifications. Obviously, the county deals in a robust amount of federal compliance requirements, as well as state and local. On the federal side, all staff meet Secretary of the Interior professional qualification standards, albeit for history, archaeology, architectural history, historic architecture. Now, we don't currently meet requirements because we're not landscape architects, and we are primarily archaeologists and historians. However, we engage the services of people that are qualified, and through our practice, we become cognizant of what considerations, and in working with our partners and firms and our constituencies, what do we need to consider from architectural history? What do we need to consider from historic architecture in our planning? State and local, all three of us are listed on the Arizona Antiquities Act blanket permit, which also allows us access to the state database of archaeological sites that we incorporate into a much larger. AZSITE is a planning tool, but it's only one planning tool of many that the county uses in terms of its compliance planning. So I'm going to take you real quick through our programs, and I note that it is plural here, right? So the first is obviously the county. We need to ensure that all county departments and units of Pima County government, every one of them, comply with applicable federal, state, and local laws, regulations, rules, standards, procedures, and guidelines. Here's a list of the prominent departments that we service. That's mandated project review, all mandated through the Board of Supervisors and County Administration through us for implementation. Here you're seeing the Joint Courts Project. It was a major excavation that occurred over at the Public Service Center. That was all locally funded, local project, no federal nexus. Now, state act and local policy applied, which made this project a reality. This is an animal, the Animal Care Center, when it was redeveloped, obviously it was in a core area, very significant area. We worked with them, with the planning team and the facilities management department to ensure that all the proper procedures and protocols were followed. Again, no federal nexus on that one. Then we move into private development. I'm going to turn it over to Courtney again, who leads our private development and right-of-way compliance program.
Yes. So private development, these are the permit applications are all submitted through Development Services Department, and that's how they get funneled through to us. And these are examples of development plans that were submitted for instance, a subdivision or a Pima County right-of-way permit from private developers. Next. A list of the most common submittals that are reviewed by cultural resources staff. I've been doing these reviews for 17 years. Site construction permits, formerly known or also known as grading permits, tentative final plats, rezonings, comprehensive plan amendments, specific plans, development plans, all of these are seen by cultural resources staff. Next. And I'll take you through a quick review of the actual process. For rezonings, the process is a little bit more complicated. Our process for rezonings includes a pre-application meeting, which is a meeting with Pima County staff from all the departments who do the reviews. There's like a placeholder every month, once or twice a month, to meet with potential developers who have a potential rezoning. And at those meetings, we discuss all the issues, potential red flags, potential conditions and requirements, including cultural resources, so that the developer has an idea of what the process will look like at the outset. After that pre-application meeting, the developer may submit an application through Acela. Acela is a civic platform to facilitate application, departmental review, permitting, and inspection that is used both by the applicant and all Pima County staff who are assigned to do the reviews for private development. For rezonings, then the or if we could go back.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Planning and Zoning Commission and, of course, the Board of Supervisors approvals are required for rezonings. For all the other, most of the other permits, such as grading permits, tentative plats, development plans, they all come through in Acela. I am prompted to look at my page in the Acela program. I go a couple times a week at least because we have only 4 days to do the review, to begin the review and give a response. And then we do, the cultural resources staff reviews the records and our spatial database. And Ian will go over later in the presentation the types of records and resources we use to make those reviews. And then I would respond with the appropriate cultural resources requirements based on my review of Pima County records or approval with conditions and submit those requirements back into the Acela program for development services staff and for the developer to see. And I should say that 15 years ago, we did a lot of education with development services department staff and worked with them a great deal to really provide them some training on how important it is to be able to have a cultural resource review of any private development at the beginning and early as possible in the process of development before they produce architectural plans or engineering plans even. So it's very much ingrained. Cultural resources review is very much ingrained in the process. If cultural resources are identified on the subject property through either cultural resources survey, which had been required by staff, requirements may include preservation in perpetuity if recorded on a plat, conservation easements dedicated to Pima County, restricted covenants, set aside open space conservation, or monitoring and data recovery. So we want to emphasize avoidance of the disturbance or destruction of cultural resources, if at all possible, and I work with private developers on that. And last case scenario is to minimize or mitigate through data recovery.
So that's private development. We're also a certified local government. We administer the county certified local government agreement with the Arizona State Historic Preservation Office and the National Park Service. This requires us under federal law to be consulted on all Section 106 undertakings that occur within Pima County's jurisdictional boundary. We also review all the National Register nominations, as well as it qualifies us of having professional staff as part of that certified local government designation, which makes us a much more likely candidate to receive federal funding through grant awards. And then we also review interagency and private industry. These are the massive undertakings. Examples are like the I-11s, the Sonoran corridors, the HUD bays, the SunZias. That obviously occupies a lot of our time. And even though the county may not have a land fee interest in it, we are a consulting party on these, as well as coordinating through Section 106 undertakings held by the five municipalities within Pima County. Obviously, we coordinate with the Historical Commission and present Pima County projects for mandated and courtesy commission reviews. We historic zoning, review applications for the historic zone and historic landmark zone designations. Compliance data management, we administer multiple database platforms that contain information on cultural resources within Pima County that's protected by federal and state law. We serve as the responsible entity for the county per the purchase agreement for monitoring of the Titan Missile Museum that's now owned by the county. It's a National Historic Landmark. That responsibility and oversight lies with our office, and so we advise county administration, and we assist in attractions and tourism with the operator who manages that. And then we also serve a host of other compliance needs related to biennial inspection reports for the Arizona Land and Water Trust, satisfying regulatory requirements for the multi-species conservation plan. So plan on a page. These are our regulatory compliance programs. But I want to take you really quick through really how do we do what Courtney does on the private development side. How do we do it for county projects? And the important thing is that it is built into our policy, and it's built into our PMs, and our departments, our heads are aware of it and have been trained, that every project manager is, it behooves them to come to us at the earliest phase. When a project is even in concept phase, check with cultural resources. And you'll see that that check is voluntary at this point, but there's a mandated check-in that if they haven't done that, it really creates problems in both schedule and cost in their project moving forward, and I'll show you that. So it's as simple as an email, a phone call. We talk about it. We say, what do you have? Sometimes there's not even a schematic. There's a point on a map. Tell us what you know about an area. We walk them through that so they can better plan in terms of that planning process. The next is we determine the regulatory framework, and this is really important. We call it like the Holy Triad or Holy Trinity, but there are three factors that govern regulatory compliance for cultural resources: funding, land ownership, and permitting. Now, depending on the what each of those is, it's going to say it's either local and state, or it's local, state, and federal. Sometimes you may not know that until design has already initiated. Sometimes you know it from the get-go. So in this particular project example for the Santa Cruz Bridge that I was showing you, the funding is local, the land ownership is local, and the permitting is potentially federal. And that's because that the project in its concept phase potentially needed a 404 permit and potentially needed a FEMA floodplain permit. So we create a project record, and we have this really fancy project database that I can show you here where we track information. It has all of our projects in it. If I kind of cleared the filter here, you'll see that we have over 6,258 projects, past and present, and that we have in here for 35 years-ish. We'll call it 30 years-ish. And we track a lot of different things. We track the project type, the regulatory, the compliance level. But we also have a really fancy task list in which we can have lots of different tasks associated with lots of different things. So if I go to a project, I don't know, does this one have any tasks? And some of them are pretty simple where we don't have tasks, but you can document what you're doing. So for the pedestrian bridge, you have different check-ins that occurred. So there's a meeting on 11/13/2023, and then we reviewed design docs on June 5th, 2024, and you have notes and stuff that you can put in there. So that project data record is created, and then the really important part is this records and GIS review. Up till about 15 years ago, the county was really in a paper file system. And since that time, since I came on board, we worked to really digitize and create a relational database management system in which we can really do class ones in-house. And what's important is a class one typically is reliant on the Arizona State Museum records only. But it looks at it in silo, right? There are way other amounts of resources that are out there, whether it be other federal agencies that have records, whether it be historical areas and BLM and GLO. And then we also track a variety of information that is not contained within AzSite. So we keep building condition assessments. We keep different iterations of archaeological site boundaries. We keep polygons of what areas within sites have been mitigated and what level of mitigation. So instead of thinking just horizontal, we think vertical. So our planning goes way beyond the typical class one to provide an understanding of past and present understanding of the resource, but also vertical and horizontal, as well as sensitivity. We also then take that information and we provide it back before the project actually even begins design. And that's what's really important, is that our goal is that when a project goes to design, we have adequately identified what the schedule and cost implications are going to be for cultural resources, but we also work to avoid. And so if you identify what potential conflicts may exist in a certain location, you have a way better chance of avoiding if you know that before going into design rather than and using it as a design parameter rather than designing independent of that, and then you're just mitigating against it. So the gate process is very robust. It's the county's project management process. It starts with this charter document, and this charter document is circulated to all departments that have involvement in the project. In there, it'll say that we have, and I can bring it up here so you can see it. One second. It takes you through and it gives you a project background and need statement, scope statement, and so forth. It assembles a project team so that we are memorialized in there, so each PM knows exactly who their project contact is. It does a risks analysis. It does assumptions, so you can see no impact to cultural polygons since most of the project will be built on the already disturbed area. This information was provided in the concept phase, which gets memorialized here. So then what we do is because of the fact that the project has not been designed yet, we do a conditional approval because we don't know whether FEMA is going to have a role in it or 404 is going to have a role in it. So that means that they are required to check back in with us at the 50% design phase. So at the 50, the design begins, it gets to a 50% design mark. Sometimes it could be a 25%, 30%. It really depends on the project. And then what happens is it goes back to a multi-departmental review. A meeting is held, and at that meeting, we pre-authorize the project to transition from design to construction, and we approve it. And when we approve it, we conditionally approve it. We are never, ever approving holistically because we need to ensure that certain conditions that we identified hold true at the 100%. So in a conditional approval, we note that all project activities must be limited to those detailed in the project charter. The project has been determined to not require a U.S. Department of the Army 404 Clean Water Act permit or FEMA permit, and then all project activities must be contained within the project area. And then we always do a condition of noting the importance of ancestral burials and human burials that may or may not be unearthed during the construction event. To give you an idea of the volume of amount of work we do, this is from fiscal year 20 to fiscal year 24, have anywhere from 750 to 882 active projects a year. One project, Silverbell, gets a value of one. Also, a real property review gets a value of one. A real property review may take 30 minutes. A Silverbell project may take 6 to 8 years. A Sonoran Corridor, an I-11, they all get a value of one. The complexity of what we do from a standpoint of how many different actions go into it, and there are three of us, right? So Courtney is really leading the right-of-way utilities, development services, as well as touching on others. Scott and I have been doing a lot of the other stuff. And what's clear is this is only half of the equation. This is a compliance level and the complexity that we're doing. Obviously, there's a large number of federal projects that we do. Local and state only fall under this banner. And then, again, half of what we do is compliance. This is the other half. This is we can give a whole another presentation on with regards to the management monitoring and the identification and priority cultural resources lists, management plans, land acquisition. For the sake of time, we already went over. We decided to cut it short. Questions? Well,
thank you so much, Ian. I'm not sure we can really take questions because we're down to 13 members. If we lose, we're close to being shy on a quorum. But what I would suggest is that you and I talk about the second half of the presentation that you weren't able to give.
Sure.
And also, since you sent this and the city sent theirs, we can continue to have discussions and questions. And so I would be curious, how many clearance projects does the city have? You know, things like that to think about, you know, the comparisons between the programs, why they're similar, why they're different, and things like that. But, I mean, I think we can take one question if someone has one before we move on. No one? But this was really, really helpful. And Corin and Dan, do you have any questions or comments? Or?
No comments or questions, but we really do appreciate Ian and their team meeting with us and allowing us to learn from them and things of that sort. So, yeah.
Great, thanks. Ken, brief question only, please.
Yes, and for the county, do you have the complete records intact still from all the years with Linda Mayro? Because I had a meeting with the county administrator about an archive, and I don't know how much you've saved or what you have from an archive or if you currently have an archive. The county administrator, Lesher, mentioned the different departments have their own archive, but they don't really have a central area where everything is. And part of the issue of making sure that you don't get a mistake or something happening is having an archive that you can go back to and say, well, was something done? Oh, Linda did this 20 years ago, and you go look this up. So I think I want to just have a thought going forward about how do we have a countywide archive?
Yeah, real quick answer to that is we are the archive for anything cultural, but we also keep track of all past projects in terms of spatial location, where they were. They link to a drive that has all the relevant project information, all the relevant cultural resources information that was done at the time. And so no place is we don't ever clear a place holistically, right? we clear it based off of the level of action that's happening. So every place-based compliance activity that we look at, we re-look at if there's a new use that's ever proposed. So we have places that we've reviewed 13 times in the county, and we have different cultural resource actions that apply to that specific scope and scale of the project that was being proposed. So from an archive standpoint, we are the archive for anything cultural resource historic preservation. When it comes to design plans and when it comes to design iterations and everything like that, we may have copies of it, but those are still held primarily by the sponsoring department.
Okay. Is everything online now, or do you still have paper?
No, it's not online. And the reason it's not online is we're dealing with a sensitivity issue in terms of what we can and can't share and the level of staff effort that it's going to take to figure out what reports can be publicly available online and what reports need to be redacted. And it just takes a lot of person power to go through that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. Carla, I just wanted to say that Courtney Marks texted me and said she jumped on by phone around 12:40, but she didn't really have a way of announcing herself except jumping in, right? So do you want to record her as joining at 12:40? And Courtney, are you the number ending in 5-4, or which number are you? I can't see the number on my phone.
Ending in 5-4.
Yes?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay.
I see her.
So she's, and you jumped on at 12:40, yes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll let you note that, Carla.
Okay, thank you.
All right, anyway, thanks so much again to both the city and the county for those really informative presentations and so on. So let's just briefly zip through this agenda before we lose everyone. Update item 13 is update on Pima Community College-owned historic motels on Drachman. Commissioners Lozano and Scoville, others.
I'll go ahead and report. We have a significant update. I've got more communication from the county, and they have picked one proposal, and they're going to have a public meeting. Chancellor Nassie's calling it a listening session, and I'm hoping they'll listen. But anyway, that is going to be on October 17th at 5:30 p.m. at Pima Community College boardroom. And the project, and it's still very quiet. I know nothing more than it's Poster Frost. Murtaugh is the architect, and TOEFL, I think, is the contractor on this. And again, the Pima Community College, the only requirement was to save the sign. So I don't know if they're leveling all the resources or they're going to incorporate them into, and I have no idea what the design or what it's all about. So I guess we're all going to find out on the 17th.
Could we post that time and place again, please?
Okay.
October
17th, Thursday, yeah. 5:30 p.m. at the boardroom, which is out on Broadway and Rosemont area, I think, but out on Broadway.
Thank you.
Okay. And a very important meeting for everybody to attend to have a good showing.
Yeah. Ken, could you email those details if you have anything more formal to Carla, and she can send them out to everyone so they can easily find them and put them on their calendars?
Okay. I will.
Thank you very much. That's good news. Okay. Item 14 is Plan Tucson update. Corin, Helen?
I can give just a real quick. So we're working on finalizing the document for the first draft. Hopefully have that out to you soon to the general public. And then we're still doing kind of pop-up events, and we'll hold some community meetings as we move forward. But real quick, that's kind of where we're at. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen.
Yes, our working group met on September 25th, and I think it was a very effective meeting. City staff, Jessica Janicek, Cesar Acosta, and Amanda Smith were all there, and we were able to get a significant amount of specific information exchanged. I think we have a very good working relationship right now, and as soon as we get the next draft, We hope to go back and work on our comments and then talk to staff again. I think this is a great model of collaboration.
Great. Thank you, Helen. And thank you, Dan. Okay, item 15 is Pima Prosper's update. Courtney and Commissioner Lamb.
This is Commissioner Lamb. So we're working. We have not had a meeting since the last commission meeting, but we are working on setting one up for October 21st.
Okay. Did you have something, Courtney?
Nope, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, hold on. Thank you. Okay, Tim, did you have a question?
I was just going to say I'm switching from the computer to my phone. The last two numbers are 2-3.
Okay, thank you, Tim. So your presence just continues, but you switch media. Okay, thank you. All right. Item 16 is update on archaeological site damage at the border. Commissioner Steer? Peter, are you still on? I guess no report, Carla, on this one?
No, I
don't know what time
him.
Peter left. Could you tell?
No, I'll find out as soon as I get the transcript.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Item 17 is Commissioner's Summary of Current Events. Does anyone have a current event that they would like to share? Okay, nothing shared, I'll say. Item 18 is call to the audience. Did we receive any comments by the deadline, Carla?
No comments were received.
Item 19 is thoughts on inclusivity. Does anyone have any thoughts on inclusivity? It occurred to me during the presentations by the city and county, and then it fled my mind. It would be very helpful to know how the city and county handle or plan to handle tribal engagement and consultation, since given where we live in Tucson, it's very important. So that's my wanting to be inclusive with tribes in our area. Okay. Item 20 is schedule and future agenda items. For upcoming meetings, please let me know by no later than November 1st, 2024, if you have an item to be considered for the November 13th, 2024 agenda. And thank you, everyone, and thanks, everyone, for their presentations. So we are adjourned at 1:58 p.m. And Carla and Anna, if you could just stay on, and I just have a question for you. And
okay.
Bye, everyone. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye.
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 Thank you.
Well, great. Good meeting. And you got a list of everyone who was on the call, correct? Who wasn't a commissioner and so on.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Did you know who Joe Barr was? I know who John Burr is, but I don't know who Joe Barr is.
I don't know who he is. Let me find out if he's with the city or
the county
or county. But yeah, I've never seen him before.
I don't know. Yeah. It looks like he was projects man of Parks and Rec, I think. I'm not sure. So that's what his thing was. I was looking for.
Interesting, but I think we mm-hmm. need to maybe Corin or Dan know who, but with the city, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe he'll be in the city directory or something. But we had Maria Gayoso on there for a while.
Yes.
She's in planning. I know some of the others, so at least I was able to take notes on who was there early on. Sorry about that. That
there was a guest. There was a guest. Her name is Chris Gade. It's G-A-D-E. Gade, yeah.
She is the new director over at Planning and Development Services.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have her down here.
And okay. I think we had her last time, too.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, let's see. So I had an email. No, that was another one. Were you able to get a transcript on this, you think?
Oh, you know what? Hold on one second.